thank you all. When I saw the agenda for today and I saw that I was speaking after Satya and after Brad, I wasn't quite sure whether I should be honored, inspired, or terrified. I think it's terrified, but I am inspired by what they said about building a cloud-first, mobile-first world, very inspired by the vision of what really the fourth industrial revolution can be. And so rather than speaking about the what or the why of what the digital future is, I'm hoping I can spend a little bit of time talking about one of the pieces of the how. You heard Satya speak about Microsoft's mission statement. Docker's is actually quite similar. Our mission is to create tools of mass innovation. And we believe that at this point in time in history, there's no more powerful force for innovation than unlocking the creativity and the energy and the enthusiasm of developers around the world. And not just opening up and liberating them from the concerns of how you build things and what kind of infrastructure you run things on, but also liberating IT pros and operations as well. And it's our belief that if we can harness the power of the 20 million or so developers that there are in the world, amazing things can happen. So my talk today is an introduction to Docker and containers, for those of you who are not familiar. And then I'll be spending the bulk of my time on Microsoft and Docker. And if I were to say the most important word on this title slide, it's the word "and," which is why it's in all capitals. This is a story about Microsoft and Docker, of course. It's a story about what happens when you combine a 100,000-person company with, at the time, a 50-person company. It's about what happens when you collaborate on open source and collaborate around commercial. It's what happens when you take into account the needs of developers and the needs of operations. And it's a story of what happens when you think not only about amazing, radical digital transformations, but also what are the practical steps that you can put in place so that you can have incremental revolutions. So as I mentioned, I'm going to be starting with a discussion of Docker and containers. And just so I can get a sense of how the audience is laid out, if you are familiar with Docker or containers, can you raise your right hand? Okay, and if you're unfamiliar, can you raise your left hand? All right. And as I mentioned, Docker is about developers. It's also about IT pros. So if I can ask, if you are consider yourself an IT pro or an ops expert, can you raise your right hand? But this time, raise it really high and hold it really still, reflecting your interest in uptime and stability. All right, and if you're a developer, can you take your left hand and wave it around wildly and possibly hit your neighbor? And if you're a CIO, you know, just pretend that the right hand knows what the left hand is doing, and you'll be fine. So this really is what Docker is about. It's about enabling a world in which development can be agile, enabling a world in which creativity can happen, enabling a world in which collaboration can happen. But at the same time, we can have automation, we can have stability, we can have security, all very important aspects of building the digital future. So I'll spend the next 5 minutes or so talking about the basics of Docker and containers. So if you were one of the people who was familiar, you can take a nap for 5 minutes. Although I would encourage you, if you can, listen to it. If nothing else, this is the way that I describe Docker when I go home for the holidays. And I've spent most of my career trying to explain what I do to my relatives in Ohio. And this works about half the time. The other half the time, I end up saying that I work in computers and end up fixing people's printers. But you know, regardless, this is how it works. I sort of start by saying the world of technology has fundamentally changed. And if you go back into the dark ages of technology, maybe 10 years ago or so, there were three fundamental assumptions that underlay much of the tools that were built. We assumed that applications were monolithic. We assumed that they would rarely change, once every 6 months or so would be active. And we assumed that they would run on a single server. And that led to an approach which was based off of things like waterfalls and virtual machines. And really, the machine was the unit that we worked with. You were going to change an application, you were going to create an application, you were going to move an application, you started at the machine. Now, all three of those assumptions have changed. These days, applications are increasingly developed very, very rapidly and quickly. We have customers who push over 200 changes to their environment every single day. They're built from loosely coupled services, so it's no longer monolithic. And of course, between the cloud and virtualization, we no longer think about running on a single big named server. Instead, we want to run our applications across large numbers of smaller servers. Now, this looks great on PowerPoint, but as they say, power corrupts, PowerPoint corrupts absolutely. And we have yet to build the tool that will allow you to take something that works well on PowerPoint and turn it into code. And if you think about what is underlying this world in which you have lots of things which are constantly changing, produced by lots of people that needs to run effectively in lots of different environments, what you end up with is something that we fondly call the matrix from hell, where every row of the matrix is a different language, framework, version of an application, and every column is a place that you might want to run it. And of course, we're constantly creating new rows and new columns, and so trying to get these things to interact and trying to get all of the different services that make up an application to interact smoothly is often a problem. The solution, or at least part of the solution that we found, is actually very similar to one of the solutions that helped enable one of the industrial revolutions. And you can think of Docker, this is how I explained it to my aunts, as sort of the digital equivalent of a shipping container. Now, if you think about what a shipping container does, it's a box, but much more than a box. It's a box that's always the same size and has hooks and holes in all the same places. And so no matter what's on the inside of a shipping container, the outside is always the same size and always has hooks and holes in the same places. And so as a result, we went very quickly in the physical world from a world in which every time you're taking a good and going from a ship to a plane to a truck to a crane, you'd have to unload and reload. We also went from a world in which you'd have to worry if you were, let's say, shipping coffee beans, whether you were shipping them next to somebody else's spices and you'd have bad interactions, to the shipping container. And suddenly, you didn't worry about bad interaction effects. I can have my bananas in my shipping container next to your monkeys in your shipping container, and they won't interact in a bad way. But the same container can go from the factory to the ship to the train to the truck to the crane without being opened, without being modified. And we wanted to do the same thing for code. And only in this world, of course, the application or the service is what's on the inside of the container. What's on the outside of the container, the equivalent to the ships and trains and trucks and cranes, are the machines that are being used in the data center or the virtual machines that might be in the cloud, that might be virtual in the public cloud. And within a few months of launching the Docker project, which launched just about 3.5 years ago, we were able to demonstrate in the Linux environment yet the ability to take any application, a Linux application, Dockerize it, which happens in a matter of milliseconds, and take that same containerized application and move it from a developer's laptop through testing, staging, and production without modifying it, and it works. Take it and then move it from a virtual environment to a bare metal environment, push it up to Azure or some lesser cloud, pull it back down, and as a result, you had a huge unleashing of the ability to be creative. Just the fact that dev and ops were no longer fighting, no longer pointing fingers at each other when things broke as they went from the developer's laptop to the testing and staging environment was a radical transformation. In fact, we had one customer who said that prior to Docker, they had the typical problem where when things went from dev to staging, they would break, to test, it would break, in production, it would break, when you scaled it, it would break. And they said people would always point fingers, and they wanted to implement a rule that said, if you point fingers, we're going to cut them off. And they said that only worked 10 times, and then they needed to... And suddenly with Docker, though, you build once, you can deploy anywhere, and if there is a problem, at least you know whether it's on the inside of the container and it's the developer's issue, or it's on the outside of the container, it's operations issues. So this was fantastic, but just as the shipping container wasn't the beginning and ending of the industrial revolution, there's a lot more work that needs to happen. And what we see is that as Docker gets deployed into more environments, as you have more developers creating more applications that run on more servers in more mission-critical ways, what you really need is not just a container. Containerization is the start, but what you need is a global supply chain. Only in this case, it's a software supply chain that has as elements containerization, but also has elements of how you orchestrate and control machines, how you orchestrate and control applications, because these days most applications are composed of lots of different containers that want to behave as a logical whole, how you do the life cycle, so you understand how applications are built, modified, tested, secured, deployed, updated, et cetera, but also all the things that have made the global supply chain important as well. You know, the global supply chain isn't centrally controlled. There are different machines and different cranes and trains and trucks, et cetera, all around the world, and yet just as you want to be able to in the physical world, manufacture something and know that you can ship it somewhere without having to worry about what the final destination will be or what the final or what every step along the way will be. In the software world, similarly, you want to be able to build applications and know that they can run anywhere because anywhere will change. And similarly, if you're building data centers, you want to be able to build them with resiliency. You want to be able to build them so that whatever happens, whatever creative new things come in terms of applications or forms of applications, or uses of data centers, that it'll be resilient and reliable. And underneath it all, of course, is a sense of trust and a sense of certification. So our goal was to create a software supply chain. So a little bit about Docker itself. We are the primary authors of the Docker open source project, and I'll talk a little bit about some of the statistics that we're seeing within the Docker open source project, but this is now one of the most successful open source projects of all time. There are, as I mentioned, only, you know, there's 250 Docker employees, but there are over 8,000 people who work on some aspect of Docker in the broader community, a lot of whom come from Microsoft. There are hundreds of ecosystem partners and hundreds of thousands of Dockerized applications that are available for use. And this has been really important to us because this has enabled an industry to coalesce around some standards, but more importantly, coalesce around a minimal set of ways of doing things so that we can have a flowering of inspiration around how we build applications and how we deploy applications. Now, Docker is not a charity. We also have commercial solutions. Docker's commercial business is built off of enabling people to build, ship, and run Docker at scale. We do this both through providing service and support for the underlying Docker engine, long-term support, and a set of tools around orchestration, registry, security, workflow, control plane, the sort of things that I mentioned on the previous slide. And interestingly, Docker's collaboration with Microsoft is not only on the open source side, but it's also very deeply on the commercial side as well, which should be good news for customers and also good news for Microsoft partners. So a little bit more about embracing open source. This is a report that, from a report that just came out a few weeks ago, listing the top open source repositories and the top organizations that contribute to this. And I put this up here not to brag about Docker, but actually to say what an amazing thing it is, if you look on the right, that the top organization in terms of having projects that people contribute to is now Microsoft. It's not Facebook, it's not Google, it's not Red Hat. Microsoft is now the leader in open source. And we're honored to be part of that, but also encouraged by what this means in terms of a new world. And some of the things that happen when you have open source. These are some of the statistics that we track in the Docker project. And these are, if you look at the number of servers that are running Docker, it's something north of 9 million. If you look at the number of people who are developers, again, it measures in the millions. If you look at the number of applications that are available in the Docker format, it measures in the hundreds of thousands. And if you look at the number of those containerized applications that have been pulled, it measures in the billions. The end of June, the number, cumulative number of containers that had been pulled was 5 billion. A year earlier, it was something like 500 million. And 2 years ago, it was 500,000. So we've seen massive, massive increase. The number today is approaching 8 billion. So you can get a sense of the movement here. But this is really only part of it. What I think is more exciting about what open source has enabled is it's enabled a very rich ecosystem. There are over 400 Docker partners. There are actually over 100 Docker-related startups that have been funded. Large numbers of people who are building. And so as a result, when we go in to speak to customers, we say, you don't need to bank on Docker. You can bank on the ecosystem. You can bank on the fact that all the major networking vendors, all the major OSs, all the major clouds, all the major monitoring and logging tools, now and in the future, will be coalescing around this standard. Some cases, those folks compete with Docker Inc. Some cases, they collaborate with us. But ultimately, what we do is we provide to users a rich ecosystem that they can build on in the future. So Docker open source is a big part of the story. And what we tend to see is that Docker comes into organizations fairly naturally. Generally, the way that Docker comes into an organization is an individual developer is inspired, or an individual DevOps team. They start with Docker free, Docker open source. Often have great successes. But then over time, what we see is that naturally, there are more and more teams who are using Docker with multiple different roles. People go from deploying applications in a single container to multi-container apps. They go from single server to multi-server, from stateless apps to stateful apps, and of course, from pilots into production and sensitive data. And at that point, you really do need the set of tools that enable you to run a global supply chain around software. And the solution that we've seen across hundreds of commercial customers and tens of thousands of cloud customers is that the right architecture is something that we call containers as a service, or CAS. And this builds on one of those principles I mentioned earlier, which is that to get transformation in a way that doesn't constrain, you want to choose the right area to standardize on. And in this case, what we say is the right area to standardize on is the container and the container format and how it's secured. What you shouldn't try and do is force constraints on the languages, frameworks, and platforms that people use, And you shouldn't force constraints on what infrastructure people should use, because after all, most organizations have a hybrid infrastructure and they're looking to add more. And so the polite way that we say this is that you shouldn't try and build your transformation solely around IaaS. IaaS is too low. You shouldn't try and build it around PaaS. PaaS is too high. But you want to build it around CaaS, which is just right. Again, that's the family-friendly way that we state it. In a less family-friendly way, we'd say, if you're looking at IaaS or PaaS or CaaS, just make sure that you understand the difference between your ass and your elbow, and you'll be okay. So what does a Containers as a Service environment look like? Well, you have, on the left-hand side, you have the build environment. This is where individuals and groups are building and creating and containerizing code. You have the right-hand side, which is operations. This is where the code is being written, deployed as containers, moved as containers, updated as containers. And in the middle is really where these things meet, which is a centralized repository of containers. And generally speaking, in most organizations, the containers that they have in the center come from three different places. There's containers that come commercial off the shelf, so you might want a standard database or a standard web server. There are containers that are being built by your group, which are need to be updated and modified. And then there are containers that generally come from some other work group within the company. The goal within a true CaaS environment is that this can happen continually, that the building of applications built from containers and the deployment can happen both continually and in a way that is decoupled, so that new containers can be built and updated constantly, and yet you can follow the same rules, techniques, and policies for how you deploy them. In a CaaS environment, people can build any application, containerize it. As you build it, it gets digitally signed, so you know that it hasn't changed. You can trace it all the way back to source. Generally speaking, when people are building applications, it then kicks off a CI/CD process, and after it's passed all the internal tests, it gets signed. After it passes security review, it gets signed. And then at that point, you have a secure registry of applications that are up to date, that, by the way, can be scanned against all known vulnerabilities, and then deployed into production. But production, there's no limits. Production can be on-prem, production can be virtualized, production can be bare metal, production can be public cloud. And we provide the tools that not only let you manage this entire workflow, but also a control plane that lets you see how containers are running, where they're running, push updates, et cetera. So that's fairly generic, and that's a solution that we put in place for over the past year in a lot of Linux environments. What's become very exciting in the past couple of years, in the past month, is that we're now able to extend this. So it's not only, ops and dev, it's not only on-prem and off-prem, it's also Linux and Windows. So Docker has been working with Microsoft for almost 2 years, so more than half of our life, to build this, to bring the capability to do Docker on Windows to market. And what is really exciting to me is that what this means is you can now build applications with .NET components on Windows, you can build it with .NET on Linux, you can build it with traditional Linux components, you can actually even combine different components into the same base application using the same tools, and yet still deploy across any OS, any version of Linux, or deploy on the Windows server, and again, in any environment, physical, virtual, or cloud. This has been a deep collaboration, and Microsoft is now one of the top 5 contributors to Docker open source. Give you a little bit of a sense of what's happening behind the scenes. So this is not suitable for sharing with your aunt at the holiday dinner. But a lot of people have had a mistaken impression that containers is only a Linux technology. And what we've seen with Microsoft is that we can actually deploy it using something that looks like a 3-layer cake. So at the very base level, Microsoft has invested in creating essentially the equivalent of control groups and namespaces and layer capabilities within the Windows kernel, which mirror those which are in the Linux kernel. The top layer of this cake is Docker, standard Docker, all the standard Docker tools. And there's a very thin shim in between that connects the two. That was built in the open using open governance. And the fact that Microsoft has embraced openness really means that we now have the ability for people to build regardless of which tools they want, regardless of which languages they want, regardless of whether they're a Windows shop, a Linux shop, or some combination of these. And we've gone beyond open source, of course, to make this a commercially powerful relationship as well. And I'm extremely proud to say that when Windows Server 2016 ships, every version will ship with a commercially supported Docker engine. This is our hardened, long-term support version of Docker. The enterprise support is provided by Microsoft and backed by Docker. It's shipped at no additional cost, and so anyone who's going to be deploying Windows Server 2016 will have Docker, and by default, all of the applications that your developers are building today, most likely using Docker, will run without issues. You won't have to have a separate support contract. You won't have to have a separate relationship. And then if you want to start going to scale, you want to start using Docker with lots of developers on lots of servers, our commercial management CAS toolset, which is called Docker Data Center, is also available in conjunction with Microsoft. And this collaboration actually even goes beyond what I've already discussed, because while we've been building collaboration on the engine side, and while we've been building collaboration around the management toolset, we've also been building collaboration on the very basic tools that developers need to get started. So if you're using Visual Studio, the ability to create and debug and build applications is natively integrated with native Docker. If you're looking to get started and you want to have a large library of .NET components, Windows images, .NET on Linux, that's all available through the standard Docker Hub. And on the run side, we've taken great steps to integrate not only the ability to order, buy, and support Docker Data Center, but we've also engaged on a set of projects to make sure that the administrative tools that you use for running containers and applications works well with the tools that Microsoft has put in place for managing machines and operations. So very tight collaboration between us. All right, so that's the technology. Who is using Docker? According to one survey that we've seen, close to 60% of all organizations have at least one Docker application running in production, one Dockerized application running in production. The logos that you see up here are a subset of the hundreds of commercial customers that Docker has who are deploying Docker in production for mission-critical workloads. And what you'll notice as you look at this list is that while there are some very cool webby companies on here, huge amount of usage in Docker by traditional healthcare companies, traditional governments, finance, manufacturing. These are people with mission-critical, highly sensitive, business-critical applications. And what we've seen is whether you are starting your Docker journey by building a cool new microservices application, or whether you're starting by Dockerizing a legacy application or a traditional application, there are benefits to both. And this brings me to another point, which is that while Docker is intended to be a disruptive and revolutionary technology, adopting it shouldn't be. And the vast majority of people who start with Docker start with a single application, either a new application or a legacy application. They deploy it, they get benefit within the first couple of days, and that enables them to build muscle memory around things like CI/CD and containers and Docker. And more importantly, it helps build within their organization groups of evangelists, people who've had success, who can take it farther. And so if you are looking to deploy Docker, my biggest message to you is to really get started and to pick something small and gain success. And my next message to you is to not fall into the trap of thinking that the world is bimodal, that there's a world of cool microservices applications that run in the cloud, and then everything else that's legacy will never change and runs on-premise. In fact, what we're seeing is that the approach of Docker and the approach of containerization lends itself, of course, to cool new things, but it also lends itself to problems like taking traditional apps, moving them from one data center to another data center, or getting more agile in how you evolve your applications, getting better at CI/CD, et cetera. In fact, a very common use case that we'll see is that people will start with Docker with a set of monolithic older applications. They'll start by just Dockerizing the whole application. And doing that, you might say, well, why are you doing that? You gain portability. You gain the ability to move from one data center to another, or one set of machines to another. You break the dependence on particular versions of operating systems. And again, importantly, you build muscle memory around things like CI/CD, collaboration between teams, et cetera. And then once you've done that, what we see time and time again is that people will start by Dockerizing their monoliths, and then they'll look across the monoliths and say, hey, you know what? We have an auth service across all of our applications. Let's pull that out as its own container. Or we have a session manager. Let's pull that out as its own container. And so in a very organic, gradual, incremental way, you can take older applications and start breaking them down into microservices that can be built by small teams, updated by small teams independently. And this is an exciting story that we've seen across lots of companies over the past few years. It's now a story that we're also starting to see as we're bringing Docker and Windows together. And one company that I'd like to highlight is Tyco. So if you're not familiar with Tyco, they're actually headquartered in Cork. But Tyco's job is to monitor, I believe they have over 3 million customers in 200 countries. And their job is to help monitor alarm systems, among other things. So monitor fire systems, intrusion systems, which, as you can imagine, is a big data problem. It's also a big update problem, because if they want to make a change to the application, they not only have to deploy it to their data center, they also have to deploy it to millions of customers worldwide. They started with a traditional application, a traditional three-tier .NET application called Secure 9000. Using the pre-production version of Docker and Windows containers, they were able to go from releases taking a long time to having releases happen very quickly. They've Dockerized individual components of the Secure application, and now they're gradually breaking it down into smaller and smaller components. And this is, again, using the native capabilities there in Windows Server and in Docker. And this is exciting to me because it's a life-saving application, it's a mission-critical application, and it's an application that does not require doing big, bold, and new things. It involves doing existing things in a more intelligent way. So if you're interested in learning more, we have a lot of information available. There are webinars, there is ordering forms. As I mentioned, if you're using the eval version of Windows Server, it comes with Docker by default. When Windows Server goes GA in a few weeks here, it'll also be there. And you can sign up and learn how to use use Docker. We've also gotten a large set of tools that are available for lift and shift, as well as creating new microservices applications. So in conclusion, a lot of great things that are happening. You know, if I try and bring it back to what Satya and Brad were talking about, the world is changing. The world is becoming more digital. The world is becoming more global. Hopefully, we're doing a good job of unleashing the creativity and power of millions of developers and millions of IT pros worldwide. A mentor of mine once said, "I may not know what the future looks like, but I know how to get there." And I think if we think about what the digital future will mean, the cloud-first future, the fourth digital transformation, I can't tell you what it's going to look like. I'm not going to tell you who are going to be the winners and the losers. I'm not going to tell you what applications are there. But what I will know is that we'll get there through the kinds of initiatives that Microsoft and Docker and others are working on, namely unleashing the power of developers, unleashing the power of operators, and above all, embracing a notion of openness. And I think when we're open, we not only enable creativity, but we also enable organizations around the world to harness the power of the world. So thank you so much for your attention.